Excellent. Welcome, everybody. Thank you to this tickback meeting. And while I hope it's not inappropriate, considering the fact this is an open and public meeting, I will also acknowledge that this is opening day. And best wishes to all those who are concerned about today. But with that, let's get down to business. We do have some material to cover today. The first would be the approval of the minutes from the January 15th meeting. I'd invite a motion to approve those minutes. Rebecca, your hand's up. Did you have something immediately?
I did. Judge Conklin, the minutes actually reflect a certain order of the BCPs, and our materials that we will be addressing actually reorder them. So I just wanted to confirm for the minute approval that that is the accurate prioritization of the BCPs.
That is a great question, Rebecca. The numbers were, they do not reflect any form of prioritization. It's the numbers that they were provided by the Judicial Branch Budget Committee.
And I would propose in the minutes to reflect that there is no prioritization rather than saying they're approved in priority order.
Thank you for that clarification. So I would ask the minister to reflect that the BCPs are approved without priority. That's consistent with your comment, Rebecca?
Yes, it is.
Great. Okay.
I have a
Given
question.
that.
I'm sorry, I have a question about that.
Okay. And remember, we're not getting yet now into the material about the priorities, just the minutes. Go ahead, Judge Embedee.
I think in the meeting, I think we did set that priority. I think the minutes should reflect that, even if later we don't use that. I mean, I think that the minutes are accurate.
Well, I guess the I guess the rub here is the definition of priorities. And so I understand both perspectives. The minutes are what the minutes are.
Right.
So what's the very specific language that folks are concerned about?
In the item five, the action says the tickback unanimously voted to approve three budget change concepts for fiscal year 27-28 in the following priority order, and then lists them, which I am fine with accepting the minutes as stated. I just wanted to point out that if that indeed is a priority order, then we're going to need to address it later in the meeting. If it's incorrect in the minutes, then we should correct the minutes. Sorry, didn't mean to
And as
derail this
always,
right off
I
the
completely agree with Rebecca.
Sorry about
Okay.
that.
Well, okay. So we did, as I recall, we did vote to approve the three concepts. I'm just unclear, and I can't go back and look at my notes. I don't believe we ranked them, right?
My recollection is that we did.
And two.
And rank them one, two, and three, one being inflationary adjustment, two being technology funding, and three being court interpreters.
Yes, that's my recollection.
So the minutes would therefore be accurate.
If that is the consensus, I'd be happy to move approval.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded that the minutes be approved with a cautionary note stated by Rebecca. Any objection to that? Hearing no objection, the minutes will be unanimously approved with the note that of the prioritization of the BCPs. Thanks for that clarification. All right. So that moves us beyond the minutes. I want to confirm, Megan, that there were no written or requests for oral public comment today.
That is correct. We did not receive any requests for public comment.
Great. No written or public comment today. So now we'll move to the discussion items. And I'm going to preface the discussion items with a comment quickly and just an update concerning the Dependency Council funding working group headed by Rebecca, with significant appreciation to Rebecca and her working group. This is not intended to report on what that group is doing right now because they're just at the genesis of their work, but is to report that that group, in fact, has met and is beginning their work. And now I'll turn it over to Rebecca, for any comment she has about just the task that you're undertaking.
I would say that it was a very good first meeting. We are kicking things off and jumping right into some pretty heavy discussions. Staff has been really great in providing us the history and detail as we have experienced them with the legislation and even our own methodologies. And so we will be, I think, pretty shortly identifying areas that perhaps can result in recommendations to FMS and TickBack and perhaps involve some of our other advisory committees. But overall, very good discussion and what I would consider progress. And I would welcome any comments from my fellow committee members.
Sounds like you summed that up well for them, Rebecca. So we really appreciate that and the work you guys are doing it, and we'll have continue to have updates as that work progresses. I also just reminded myself that I don't think we actually took roll. Megan, could you do that?
Happily, Judge Conklin, we will start with you. Are we present today?
I think I am. I'm not sure, but I'm at least here in
It's
person. So.
opening day. He's probably not present.
We'll take percentages. Percentages work as well. Miss Fleming.
I am here.
Thank you, Judge Bradshaw. Judge Bradshaw is having technical difficulties, but is here.
Excellent.
Judge Bowen.
I'm here.
Thank you, Judge Clark.
I'm here.
Thank you, Judge Dulcich.
I'm here.
Thank you, Judge Ametti.
You're on mute.
I'm here. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Judge Jessner.
I'm here.
Thank you, Judge Kamakarian.
Here.
Judge Kamakarian let us know prior to the meeting that they would be absent. Judge Kelly.
Here, thanks.
Judge Rogan.
I just communicated with Judge Rogan. She's had an unexpected event come up, and she most likely will not be joining us today.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Judge Sandhu. Judge Sandhu. All right. Judge Young. Judge Young did let us know that they would be absent from today's meeting. Ms. Speaker.
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Cameron.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Chatters.
I am here.
Thank you, Mr. Finke.
I'm here.
Thank you, Mr. Harrigan.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Roddy. Mr. Roddy let us know that they would be absent today. Mr. Rule. Mr. Rule. All right. Mr. Slayton.
I'm here.
Thank you. Ms. Turner.
Present.
Thank you. Mr. Yamasaki.
Yes, good afternoon, President.
Thank you. Advisory member, Mr. Theodorovic.
I am here.
Thank you. Liaison member, Judge Owani. And roll is complete.
Great, Megan, thanks so much. So now that we've sort of backed into this agenda through the previous items we've talked about, and I appreciate everybody's patience, I'll try to get a little more focused. We're now going to move into our items for today, our action items. So just as an introduction to these, we're first going to talk about BCPs, and then we're going to move into allocation proposals for four specific programs. Just as a brief note, as we move into those allocation discussions, I'm reminding everybody that yes, they are previously approved allocation methodologies. We're not discussing today the intricacies of those methodologies in the sense of they've been previously approved. But we keep these on our agenda every year to make sure that all our members are updated. I recognize that many of you are veterans, that many of you are just coming into this for the first time, and these discussions are very appropriate for both of those. I've been doing this for as long as I can remember, and every time these come up, I learn something new. So it's very appropriate that we keep these very active and transparent. Also, as is highlighted in each of these allocation methodologies, and I'm just reading the highlighted language, the final allocations are updated based on any needed technical adjustments. There's always technical adjustments, which means We are very careful to look back down at these allocations and as they come out and make corrections for any technical adjustment, sometimes called an error, that occurs. And if that happens, we're able to pivot and adjust that. That being said, the first item on today's agenda are our BCPs for the fiscal year 27-28. As we move into this, I remind everybody that that's exactly what they are. So we are in budget year, halfway through budget year 25-26 right now. The governor's proposed budget that's already come out from January addresses fiscal year 26-27. These BCPs are 27-28. So that's how far we're working into the future. We've already developed, TICBAC has already developed its own list. It's submitted that to the Trocar budget, to JBBC. JBBC has done significant work and they've developed a list that we're dealing with today. So the list today comes back from JBBC with not only TICBAC's recommended BCPs, but also a slew of other very important recommended BCPs. And I'm going to turn it over now for further discussion, just to detail all of these, to Megan. Go ahead, Megan.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. All right, everyone. So this particular item is begins on page 8 in your materials. As Judge Conklin stated, these are items that were previously reviewed by the Judicial Budget Branch Committee, or Branch Budget Committee, my apologies. Of the 31 BCCs that they reviewed at their previous meeting, 18 of those were identified as having some impact on the trial courts and as such have been brought forward to TICBAC. And that it also includes the three previous BCCs that we reviewed at our first meeting back in January. Two important things to note. Historically, TICBAC has not provided any prioritization for additional BCCs introduced by other advisory bodies, but we do have the opportunity to do so if we are so inclined. And we're also encouraged to provide any feedback on BCCs that are relevant to the trial courts. Secondly, I would like to note, because we did discuss prioritization earlier, the items that are listed on page 9 have been assigned concept numbers with no relation to prioritization by the JBBC. They hold no ranking and they don't indicate any sort of prioritization. They are the final numbers, though, moving forward to JBBC. As you can see in the report, they relate these concepts relate to facilities, deferred maintenance, data analytics, and statewide technology and operational needs. Some of these BCCs are considered safeguards as they're items that are currently included in the governor's budget. But as we are still in the budget approval process, they have not yet been finalized. So they're concepts moving forward as sort of a safeguard for those items in the budget. Finally, I will note that the JBBC is set to review all proposals again at its May 20th meeting before deciding which BCCs will advance to the full budget change proposal packet for a Judicial Council meeting on July 17th.
All right, Megan, thanks so much. So this essentially summarizes that we've moved through the process. Z, Zlatko, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, appreciate that, Judge Conklin. And with respect to, say, the items that are safeguarded, that has been our typical practice is that they were priorities last year and put forward, and then they find a way into the budget. We're hopeful that they stay in. And thus far, all indications have been, at least on the two items that were, say, in facilities related to the Orange Project and the Spring Street Project. The LAO has been supportive and there's been no headwinds. In fact, as some of you might have tracked, there was a hearing in the Senate about a month ago in which we went deep into the facilities needs and talked about the lack of funding. With respect to the Orange Project and the Spring Street Project, just want to sort of highlight those in so much as those came about as sort of unforeseen changes in circumstances. The Orange Project came about actually a handful of years ago, and we need additional resources because of state fire marshal issues, concerns with the fire life safety systems there. So there's needed to be a, you know, some immediate action there. And the Spring Street item is also been necessitated because of action at the federal government level. And so the interaction with them and the and any of the other sort of priorities of our construction program are separate apart from that. And so we have to be able to pivot as issues arise. And in this instance, those in particular were ones that came from outside of our standard planning, and we had to be able to be pivoting to ensure that those kinds of projects are incorporated. And they're primarily funded through the support budget. And I know that you may wonder what that is, but it's different than the construction budget. And so it's also in a different bucket. But otherwise, you know, we're hopeful again that those two projects, the $70 million that's in was in the governor's budget will remain. And while I don't know if I can't remember if I have a space for a budget update, things are positive thus far, and appreciate Ms. Beaker coming and Judge Kelly, and we've had Judge Mormon and Justice Hill and Judge Tapia and Judge Cortez come speak in support of the budget this year. And so that continued good work on their part, and Shelley and the chief, and that we'll be able to get this budget landed by June. But those items in the list that are the backstop covered, and they won't need to go forward for the next year.
Blacko, thanks so much. So any questions, concerns about this action item? Just essentially, we're now, as an advisory committee, acknowledging that we're in receipt of each of these back from JBBC, and we have no opposition to the action JBBC is taking on any specific item. And I've paused. I don't see any hands up or don't hear any, but
actually my hand's up.
Judge Amity. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We just need to sort out the issue of the order of the three items that were on the minutes. I don't have a strong feeling about them, whether they're 1, 2, and 3 or 1, 3, 2. Like, I don't have a strong feeling about it, but we should be consistent. This memo says we prioritized them. Inflationary adjustment, language access, technology. So either we make it consistent with what the minutes say, or we all agree that it's fine in this particular order. I have a strong feeling about that, but we should at least make that decision one way or the other.
I agree. So, and Jake, I see your hand up, but let's get this cleaned up before we move on. So the memo does specifically say, and I'm just reading from the memo, TICMAC identified and prioritized the following three BCPs: inflationary, language access, and trial courts. So that was our original intent. That's what we sent to JBBC. The BCPs back from JBBC include those three TICMAC recommendations. Now, by coincidence only, they're the top three on the list because they're the first three that JBBC addressed. So there are those item numbers from JBBC, but Judge Amity and Rebecca have both pointed out that we need to be consistent. So as I understand it, what we would approve today from our action is, in fact, that yes, we continue to prioritize 1, 2, and 3 in that order. The remaining proposals coming back from JBBC are passed through essentially without any further discussion or objection from TICMAC. Jake, do you want to comment on that specifically, or Judge Amity, did that address your concern?
It doesn't. Actually, the order of the three that are on the JBBC memo are different than the order that was in the minutes. And again, I don't have a strong feeling about that, but we should be consistent. Either we should say, yes, we want it to be inflationary adjustment, language access, and technology. In the minutes, it says inflationary adjustment, technology, language access. So we just need to, technicality, I think, but we should sort it out, I think.
We could work with the JBBC materials to renumber them in the way in which you've just described, so that going forward, those materials will have the 2 and 3 in the correct order.
So everybody's on the same page here. So what we'll do now is we will pass through, based upon Zlatko's recommendation, those three, the prioritization will be inflationary adjustment, trial court technology is number two, and language access is number three, as coming from Jake from TickBeck. Jake, you have your hand up?
I have it for the other items, not for this 1, 2, 3 topic.
Okay, so
I have comments about other of the items that are listed.
Okay, so let's first be any concern about the way we've now clarified the first three will be consistent with the minutes from the original TickBeck meeting and the original prioritization. With that, Jake, your comments?
Yeah, so I guess I'm a little curious. I know that typically it sounds like we're saying no concern or that these just kind of move forward, but you know, there are some here that it's not clear to me how they get reconciled. So obviously we put forward the technology ongoing support, IT, you know, the IT, or I'm assuming ITAC put forward improving branch-wide security, cybersecurity. So I don't know if there's a way, you know, as LockCo to kind of clarify, I have two things. So I'll lay them all out and then you can jump in. But how do those get reconciled? Like, do those ultimately get merged into one item by JC staff before going to JBBC and the council? So I'm just kind of curious about process.
Sure. There. So let me address that. JBBC does that. Often, if you track the way the process works, so you could have multiple items that are individual line items, and then they often become merged as similar topics to represent a programmatic theme. And so that becomes part of the, effectively will be with the May meeting of JBBC, in which they will be making decisions or recommendations to the council as to what should go forward to the Department of Finance. So there'll be that. Right now, these are what was submitted as individual items, but there is a review of all concepts to think about what the best package is for the branch.
Okay. Then on number 27-26, which is the public lactation rooms, I just don't remember. Is that one of those that's in the budget this year and is a placeholder to try and preserve it if it drops out, or is this not included in this year's
budget? It started as an initial $15 million legislative augmentation. And then after that came a bill, and we've gotten bits and pieces of money, but we are out of compliance with the law. And so therefore we come back to the Department of Finance and you've imposed this mandate on us and we need resources. And so this is one that's been percolating for several years now and been a sort of a victim of the budget, but we ultimately are out of compliance if we don't get resources for it. And we've actually tried to get trailer bill language so that it could alleviate the fiscal burden on us, but that's not been entertained thus yet by the administration.
Okay. So I guess Judge Conklin, I mean, I have obviously thoughts, but it doesn't sound like the rest of the group, you know, really has a lot to comment on in terms of priority. So I'll leave them there. I'll just leave with my one comment, which is there are some things in here from the facility group, you know, reassessing projects and program support. You know, we haven't moved very far on capital projects in the last couple of years. So I don't know that $14 million spent on that rather than continuing to work on our existing capital plans, to me, doesn't make sense, but that's just I don't know that the group is going to feel that way. And I think the other courts might, you know, have different perspectives, but so I'll leave it at that.
Only to maybe to provide a little bit of context that is to do the next 10-year reassessment, which would, if funded and completed timely, will impact the list. Clearly, I think the top is where it is. It's the fact that there were a number of courts that did not raise their hand in the 2017-2018 reassessment. And as we've heard from our legislative partners and the administration, is that there should need to be a reassessment done. And so that's what this funding is to look at changed circumstances, the lack of investment in maintenance that may have now caused a building to be needed for renovation and repair and replacement rather than just the continued. So this is a proposal that was put forward to the Department of Finance last year, along with the $1.5 billion that you'll see later on that list, which is to continue the projects that are currently on the list.
And Jake, your comments are always important, so I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
So the recommendation set forth on page 10 of your materials, and that is that we'll essentially provide back to JBBC with a clarification of the three top items from TICBAC and their prioritization. We'll pass through the remaining items without further objection or comment. If there's any further discussion, of course, otherwise I'd invite a motion to approve the recommendation.
Yamasaki moves approval of the recommendations.
David, thank you very much. Is there a second?
Turner seconds.
Moved and seconded the recommendation set forth at page 10 of the materials be approved with the clarification noted. Any further discussion? As the chair, I'm calling for any objections to that recommendation. And hearing no objections, I'm therefore deeming the recommendation unanimously approved. That was a vibrant discussion. Thanks, folks. That's what we're all here for, and I really do appreciate it. We're now going to move to the next four items that, as I commented on earlier, we'll have separate presentations from budget services or related entities. I really appreciate all the work that's gone into this. There is a lot of work that goes into it. But these are, again, approved methodologies to allocate these particular funds. The first one is item number two, and that's CARE Act, Community Assistance Recovery and Empowerment Act allocations. These are to consider and support individuals with serious mental health conditions through a civil court process. And Kelly is here to present this to us. Kelly, I turn it over to you.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Kelly Ragsdale, and I'm a senior analyst with the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts. The fiscal year 26-27 governor's budget allocates $32.9 million ongoing for CARE Act trial court operations. And the methodology used in this report was approved by the committee and the Judicial Council in 2023. And has been used since then to allocate CARE Act funds. Staff recommend applying the existing methodology for 26-27 funds, which gives each court a base allocation for staffing and operations, and then applies the remaining funds pro rata using the workload formula and includes a 0.5% reserve. And the allocations are detailed in attachment 2A. That is my very brief presentation, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Brief but appropriate. Thank you, Kelly, very much. Are there any questions concerning the recommendation to approve the CARE Act allocations with the recommendation set forth at page 12 of the materials? Zlatko, anything you wanted to add? Okay, that was a no. All right. So I'm inviting a motion to approve that recommendation.
So moved. This is David Slayton.
David, thank you. Is there a second?
Kelly seconds.
Moved and seconded the recommendation set forth at page 12 of the materials concerning the CARE Act allocations to be approved. It's now a pending motion. Are there any additional questions or comments? Hearing and seeing none, is there any objection to the recommendation set forth at page 12 for the CARE Act allocations? Hearing and seeing none, as the chair, I'm deeming that this recommendation is unanimously approved. Thank you very much, folks. So moving through these, the next is consideration of allocations concerning the pretrial release program allocations for 26-27, including funding floor for the pretrial release programs for the trial courts. This is going to come to us through Deidre, who is with us. I do highlight that this proposed budget reduces. So remember, we are dealing with reductions here that are ongoing. So this includes reducing funding for the pretrial services by $15 million for the current year. And that was built into this allocation methodology, essentially. So I'll now turn it over to Deidre. Deidre, go ahead.
Thank you, Judge Conklin, and good afternoon, members of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. And yes, you gave away the ending, Judge Conklin. I come to you today with the allocation recommendations for fiscal year 26-27, and the budget, governor's budget does propose $48.95 million, a reduction of $15 million with a two-year reduction of $20 million. We are continuing to recommend a funding floor for the small to small medium courts. We have adjusted that based on the reduction. So the maximum funding floor this year would be $141,987. This would allow each court to have a proportional reduction across the board. Last time we were at Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, we were asked to provide or to dig a little deeper into the needs of small courts, and we have done so. We did some research across the board to all the funding floor courts, looking at the actual expenditures and expenses for hiring probation officers. And we do find that the actual cost needed to run a fairly basic program is about $204,000. And that's for the cost of one probation officer, who then probation, as you know, uses 70% of the services. So it is outlined in the materials. I won't go into any of it unless you have questions. But even though we find $204,000 is what is required, we are recommending the funding floor court stay at a rate that is proportional to the other cuts the other courts will be taking. And so we ask that you approve the recommendations as outlined. And this is another a technical adjustment. It's actually attachment 3A on pages 17 to 18, including any technical adjustments contingent on funding, and that you direct Judicial Council staff to conduct a mid-year survey of expenditures in November of 2016 or 2026, so that we may see if any courts are willing to return funding to be reallocated to other courts that have demonstrated needs. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Excellent, Deirdre. Thank you. Kim Turner, your hands up.
So, Deirdre, thank you so much for, I think I was the one that suggested last year that maybe it's time to take a look at those small and small medium courts to try to validate whether or not the funding, the funding floor should be left where it is or should be applied across that entire group of courts. And I would just like to raise that issue again slightly differently. And I appreciate the work that you did and that it does take, what I think you said, $204,000 to stand up the basic program with one probation officer. But I would suggest and respectfully that in some courts, they don't have enough workload to support one probation officer. And so I draw your attention to this because there are tiny two-judge courts that are getting the same allocation as eight-judge courts. And I will tell you that the workload for an eight-judge court is significantly different than it is for a two-judge court. And the number of, defendants that are coming through that system I would suggest, probably considerably different. So I realize you've already taken a look at this. I appreciate that. I just want to, once again, I'm a little bit of a broken record on this, but I think when the funding is going down, we have to make perhaps a more, we have to use the scalpel a little more, carefully than we perhaps do when we're more awash in funding. And I would just ask, I mean, I'm prepared to make the motion to approve this as it stands right now, but I just want to continue to kind of beat the drum that I don't think that the small courts, the two-judge courts, are in the same position that the eight and seven and, nine-judge courts are in, and would hope that we can perhaps have a conversation about that allocation methodology in the future.
And I would,
Deirdre, can I
thank
ask
you.
a question of you,
Of
Deirdre?
course,
Is
sure.
there limitations on our ability to adjust the formula because the
Yes.
allocation methodology is effectively in budget bill language?
It is. And also, we're dependent upon county restrictions in terms of salary. And in smaller counties, it's very, very hard to recruit probation officers, and even harder to recruit a 0.5 or 0.25 probation officer to do this work. So there, yes, we are. There are a lot of limitations that we operate under that smaller courts have in spades. Yes.
This is just one of the types of allocations that isn't just an amount in the budget. There's actual structure that the pretrial funding came to us, and so we have, again, some restrictions on how we can, what we can do with it. And it talks about the 18 to 24 year old population as being
Right.
a key driver in We don't have room unless you'd like us to pursue some change in language. But then that would
Well, I
be something
appreciate that
beyond us.
context, Zlatko. Yeah, I mean, I'd kind of forgotten that it's budget bill language. But I would say that it does really disadvantage, courts that are not small and certainly not medium sized.
Yeah, for sure. And only other one other comment I would make, and I know Jake's got his hand up, so I don't want to stand in too long, but we do know just from a state budget strategy perspective that there are folks in the probation world looking to restore the $15 million ongoing reduction.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
So we're uncertain about that, but we're moving forward with what's in the budget. And that's sort of, and I wouldn't necessarily call this technical, but because there's an established methodology, the way it came out and the way it would go in would be the same. But this may be something we have to revisit because the budget, the advocates for probation funding might be successful. We don't know.
Okay.
But we know
okay,
we are
thanks.
Supporting
thanks,
the budget
Z.
as is, and that's where we are to support the chief.
Great. Zlatko, thank you. Jake?
Yes, so I just have, I think, two comments on that. I mean, one, I think it is certainly disappointing that the program is being reduced, which we've known now for a year, obviously. So that is disappointing. But I guess, and I understand the Budget Act directives or the statutory directives on how to allocate. And I may not be an option for this year, but I think to Kim's point, maybe there's a way next year that if there are courts that indicate to judicial counsel that this is not a program that they're going to be able to implement in a way that makes sense based on the size or other reasons in their county, maybe there's a way for us to have an A chart and a B chart that, the A chart is here is allocated based on statute. We've been advised that these courts are not going to use those funds. And so here's how, assuming they confirm it in July, that it will be reallocated so that it quickly gets out to the courts that'll use it. Just something to think about. I don't know if courts even give the money back. It's possible that every one of the courts that are here use all of it, and that's a moot point. But some way that makes it quicker to get it out there. I know it's not an option for this year, but maybe for the future. So
that's a good
yeah.
I like
Thanks,
that suggestion.
Jake. I appreciate that suggestion.
Yeah, I do too. I think we can work on that. So this will exemplify how judges are significantly less intelligent than CEOs. But the second part of the recommendation is the mid-year reallocation survey. So does that at least address to a degree the concerns you have about courts that get this money that simply just can't or don't spend it?
It does. It mitigates.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Go ahead, Jake. Go ahead.
I was going to say it mitigates it. It's just the challenge of as we're working with our probation departments and they might be downsizing what they have available. Well, if we then find out about that, and even this year was very early, right? There was an expedited process in the current year. They then have to now go through a rehire and reallocation process. So yes, it is helpful. It does mitigate some of that impact, but the earlier we know, the more likely probation
okay.
is going to be in a position to deliver
that makes
those
a lot of sense.
Whole years.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
And I know CPOC is definitely sponsoring some legislation to restore funding, to this program, because,
yeah.
I'll just speak from Mendocino's perspective, $141,000 will get us through the first 4 months of the year. And then the rest of it comes out of the county general fund. And so that's, I don't think that was ever the intent. And it's, it's an expensive program to run if you try to run it well.
Sure. Good points, all.
And
okay.
Judge Conklin, I just to put some reality into the reallocation process, I just want to remind you that last year we had 23 courts request a total of $12.2 million, and we had one court return $194,000. So
okay.
I don't expect this year is going to be much different, especially mm-hmm. with an additional cut. But we will certainly do everything we can to get to courts and see if they are willing to return funding.
Okay, I appreciate that. Well, good comments from all. Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion or questions for Deidre before I call for a motion? Don't see any. Is there a motion to approve the recommendation set forth on page 16 of the material?
True to my word, I said I would make the motion, Judge Conklin, and I'm prepared to make it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second, Judge Chad.
For the same reasons, Jake. Was that Jake or Chad? That was Chad.
That okay. was me.
Echoed by Jake. Okay, great. Thank you. Moved and seconded the recommendation be approved. Any further discussion? And any opposition? Hearing and seeing none, the recommendation set forth at page 16 is approved unanimously. We're now moving to item number four, which is the AB 1058 Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator allocations for the same 26-27 fiscal year. This considers the annual allocations for the AB 1058 commissioners and facilitators. Lolly is with us to present this. Lolly, welcome and thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I am Lolly Roberts, supervising attorney for the AB 1058 unit in the Center for Family, Children, and the Courts here at the Judicial Council. I'm here today to ask this committee to recommend that the Judicial Council approve at its July meeting the annual allocation, as Judge Conklin just said, for the Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator programs for the 26-27 fiscal year, as well as the distribution of federal drawdown funding as requested by the courts and consistent with the approved funding methodology. In 1996, Assembly Bill 1058 created the Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator programs to improve the handling of governmental child support throughout California. The AB 1058 unit at the Judicial Council oversees the programs and is responsible for distributing approximately $60 million in federal funding between both programs. The Judicial Council approved the workload-based funding methodology used to distribute the annual Child Support Commissioner allocation in 2019 and the population-based funding methodology for the Family Law Facilitator Program in 2021. Also in 2021, the Judicial Council directed that the data used to support the methodology be refreshed every 2 years. The data was last refreshed in 2025, and this year's allocation was determined based upon the same data used last year. Therefore, courts will receive funding under the proposed allocation that is consistent with what they are currently receiving this fiscal year. The specific amount requested for each court is contained in the attachments found at pages 21 and 22 of the meeting materials. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Excellent, Lolly. Thank you very much. Any questions for Lolly about these allocations or the recommendations as set forth? I don't see any hands. With that, I'd invite a motion.
Yamasaki moves approval of the recommendation.
David, thank you. Is there a second?
Emily, I'll second.
Moved and seconded the recommendation, which is a three-part recommendation at page 20, be approved. Now that it's open for discussion based upon the motion, any further discussion? And seeing and hearing none, is there any opposition to the motion to approve the recommendation set forth at page 20 of the materials? I see none, I hear none. I'll deem the recommendation unanimously approved, and we move to our final recommendation. And by the way, I should have mentioned earlier, we have a 1 o'clock stop time on this meeting have time for the 1 to 1:30 closed educational session, just to update you about where we're going. But let's not get there too fast. The last item number five, is court reporter allocations. This considers allocations for the $30 million annual appropriation for the trial courts to support court reporters in family law and civil type cases. Rose.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good
Rose,
afternoon.
It's good to see you again, and welcome back. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good to see everyone, too.
Turning this over to you.
Thanks. My name is Rose Lane. I'm a senior analyst with Leadership Support Services. As Judge Conklin stated, this report is a recommendation for the fiscal year 26-27 allocation of $30 million to support court reporters in family law and civil case types. The allocation methodology was originally approved by the Judicial Council in January of 2022. It uses non-criminal judicial need by court to calculate proportional percentages based on the 2022 Judicial Needs Assessment Study, which is the most current data set available at this time. To establish funding floor amounts, we use the most recent Schedule 7A data available. The funding floor is equivalent to a 0.25 of a full-time court reporter calculated using the average salary and benefits reported in the Schedule 7A. Previously, using the fiscal year 21-22 data, the funding floor was 25,000 and 11 courts qualified. For the fiscal year 26-27 allocations, in alignment with the council-approved methodology, the calculation is based on fiscal year 25-26 Schedule 7A data. This update results in more courts qualifying for the funding floor and approximately a 1% reduction in proportional allocations for the remaining courts compared to the last year. So for fiscal year 26-27, the funding floor is 51,000, which is applied to all courts. 16 courts qualify, collectively receiving $816,000, which is higher than what they would have received under a purely proportional methodology. After applying the funding floor, the remaining 29.2 million is allocated proportionally to all of the courts based on their non-criminal judicial need. You'll find a detailed breakdown of the recommendation for the fiscal year 26-27 allocations by court, and that is provided as attachment 5A on page 25 of your materials. And then lastly, I'd like to note that the judicial needs assessment is in process of being updated, and that is anticipated to be considered by the Judicial Council this year in October of 2026. And that concludes my presentation, and I'll turn it back over to Judge Conklin, but staff are on the call and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Rose, again, thank you very much for that explanation. So the funding floor courts have benefited from this, and that will require that additional courts contribute more given that. With that, I see some hands up. Zlatko, I didn't know if you wanted to add anything at this point. David, Slayton, your hands up?
Yes, thank you, Judge Conklin. This sort of is in the same line of Kim Turner's comments earlier on pretrial. I understand we're not changing the methodology today, and certainly I understand that's what we're adopting here. But I will point out that before the funding formula was $25,000, 10 out of the 16 courts that are receiving the funding for this year in the mid-year allocation last time gave back their funding because they didn't use it. As you all know, we've been criticized about the branch's inability to spend this money in the past. And so by raising that funding floor to 51,000, and then assuming that those same courts who are receiving that presumably will also be unlikely to spend it, or maybe they'll figure out a way to spend it this year, but it certainly causes me some concern that we are, providing increased funding. And ultimately, as you just pointed out, Judge Conklin, to be able to do that increased funding floor, that money has to come from courts who've perhaps traditionally spent all of their money. And so I think there's a, my concern here is that we won't be able to spend that. I note that there is no mid-year reallocation in this motion. We might want to consider whether or not we want to do a mid-year allocation. I know that makes it complicated for us who use this, because you have to figure out how to spend the money at the end of the year, but it would be perhaps worth considering, to Kim's point earlier, maybe in the future, thinking about surveying courts about whether or not they're gonna be able to spend it and take that into account when we allocate. But more importantly for this year, maybe looking at a mid-year reallocation. Just a couple of thoughts on this increased funding floor issue.
All right, I wanna leave those thoughts in play because I think that they're very warranted for a discussion. But before that, Jake, did you have a follow-up comment?
Yeah, it's along similar lines, I think. I am curious, and I realize this isn't the easiest thing to do, but the language that defines the use of these funds specifically for family law and civil and expansion into family law and civil, that's from the Budget Act of 2021. So, the intent of this was to result in the increase of availability of court reporters in those case types, and that was 5 years ago. So that has either occurred or it has not occurred. And these become core to our business. These are court employee positions. So, as we create positions, that funding needs to stay so that we can continue to pay for those. And inflation is slowly eating away at this line item, right? So it's a separate line item. As we see here, you know, to maintain a funding floor that has to increase, which means it gets less for the remainder of the courts. You know, it means we have less ability in the other courts to continue to pay for these positions when they are allocated in this fashion. We have the new assessed judicial need coming out in the fall, which would inform this as a policy next year, which could change which courts are receiving some level of funding and could have impacts on the number of positions they can spend to this with this. So I'm kind of curious whether we're at the point where that statement that this money is intended to increase court reporters for family law and civil can be removed and we can just move this into part of our base. And that this can go into part of our base funding for case-related processing work. These are our court reporters, these are our employees, and you know, the additional accounting that goes into this to say, well, today that person was in civil or family, tomorrow they got pulled into criminal, you know, as those fluctuations occur, it just adds a level of complexity that may have been necessary in the first few years, but at this point, we're half a decade in. So, you know, continuing to keep separate line items is, I guess I question why we continue to do that, other than knowing it is in the Budget Act from 2021 and would require some language changes. So I guess I would just put that out there and say, I think that would be helpful for us to eliminate this. It would give us more certainty. It would allow us to move forward as courts and not be wondering whether the funding is going to continue to dissipate for these positions.
Slocco, any comments?
Yeah, thank you, Judge. So the budget bill language persists every year related to the $30 million. And it doesn't speak to a methodology, but rather a purpose. I mean, it basically says that it shall be allocated by the council in a manner that ensures all courts are allocated funds to be utilized to increase number of official court reporters in family and civil law cases. And that this may be used for recruitment, retention, filling positions. And then it concludes with, you know, funding should not be used to supplant existing expenditures. So the reason that I think it's there is because it demonstrates that this money is there for, you know, our stakeholders who worked hard to get it into the budget. But I don't think there's anything that precludes it to be a fixed amount. And I think maybe that's more of what you're trying to get at, is it's a fixed amount that it's there. But I don't think there's going to be any appetite for at least the budget bill language, which defines that, to be removed from the budget. How we manage that internally once the appropriation is received, I think is up to us, but we still have to stay true to the intent. Though again, there's no technical language that says, like when we talked about pretrial, 18 to 25 year olds and that sort of thing. It doesn't have that same structure, more again, intent and purpose of the funding use and to not supplant existing expenditures.
Okay.
Can I follow up on that real quick, Judge?
Pardon me?
So, can I follow up on that real quick before going to David?
Sure, and then we'll go to David. We've got about 5 minutes left.
So I guess I would just say then, I would revise my request to say, you know, again, we are here, changing these things at this point is not feasible. Can we consider adding this to the funding methodology subcommittee, if that's where this would go? But one of the subcommittees to look at this next year to see, to Zlatko's point, is it time to look at the policy around how we're allocating these funds and perhaps look at these as a fixed amount that goes into the base in some way rather than revisiting each year? But that could be a future item.
Sure. I mean, recognizing Zlatko's comments that this is budget bill language, so there's no appetite to change it. On the other end, just because there's no appetite to change it doesn't mean we can't make it more effective. And I think so is what Jake's comment recognizes. So we'll show this as going back to FMS for consideration of exactly what Jake sets forth. Good comment. So I'll go to David Yamasaki, follow up quickly on David Slayton's comments, and then I'm going to try to get us concluded before 1 o'clock. David Yamasaki.
Yeah, thank you very much. I only wanted to say that I understand Jake's comments, and I do think that gives us a tremendous flexibility in using these resources that have virtually in every court been used for the intended purpose as we're required to do. But I'm a little concerned if we were to remove that language, which was the basis for getting the money in the first place. it becomes it could potentially become lost in some of the fiscal challenges and objectives that we have. So at the very least, there are interest groups, I would say, that stand behind the additional funding, and getting that level of support, I think, is very, very helpful for us to ensure that it's preserved. And if this has become something that is discussed further, maybe we can kind of look at all of the components, whether that particular direction is, going to help us preserve that funding. But anyway, that's for another day to
If I might,
discuss.
David, I don't think that the suggestion was that the language be eliminated effectively after my response, but rather how do we react to it once we've received the funding? Because I agree, there won't be anybody that would like to have that language go away. The money can stay, but then that loses its visibility. It's what we do with it, I think, is more from a technical and consistency approach. I feel like I'm talking a little bit on behalf of Jake, but yeah, I don't think there's going to be there's I don't think we are looking to eliminate the language. It's how do we use it once it's been received.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah, we surely don't want anything that risks the discontinuation or continuation of the funding. On the other hand, that doesn't prevent us from being more effective about how we allocate that funding. So very quickly, back to David Slayton's comment about a mid-year reallocation and his observation that there are some courts that just return significant amounts of money. Is there anything that would prevent us from doing, I know it's a lot of work, but a mid-year survey or reallocation?
Technically, no. It could be part of your motion is to add that. We did that recently. I'm trying to remember what we just did that for, and to maximize the use of the funds.
Well, I think that plays well with Jake's and David's. I mean, if we're going to get more efficient about this, let's get the most current information. So I don't want to cause trouble, and especially when we only have 3 minutes left. But well, let's first, is there, so the recommendation is set forth at page 24 of the materials as set forth. The only thought would be that we supplement the recommendation with a mid-year reallocation survey to the courts concerning any unspent funds and potential reallocation of those unspent funds.
And that we would authorize, and if I might just from a technical standpoint, to make it hasten it a bit, because I think there's times where the council staff have been authorized to then make that reallocation without returning to the council. The council is inherently giving the outcome of the survey the ability to then move the money quickly out to the courts.
Thank you for that.
I'll make that motion and include the mid-year reallocation and the authorization for the council to effectuate that reallocation.
Well stated, David. Is there a second?
Thank
Turner
you.
seconds.
There's a lot of seconds. Who did that first? I say Kim Turner did it first. So moved and seconded that the recommendation set forth on page 24 be approved with the supplemental language concerning the mid-year reallocation and authority of Budget Services or the Council to redistribute that money. Open for further discussion. Seeing none, any objection to the recommendation is modified. Seeing and hearing none, the recommendation is modified at page 24 of the materials is approved with 2 minutes left. Thank you all very much. Our next meeting, I believe, Megan, is May 7th. Great. We're making progress as always. I really appreciate all the work that's gone into this, both obviously from Budget Services and the significant work that they do that keeps us running. So thank you very much for that. Thanks for all the perceptive and helpful comments today from everybody. It's great to have you all along. We are now going to essentially what we're going to do is everybody stay put. We're going to go into this educational session, but we will make this now a close.